The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your host for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo.
Welcome to Silicon Valley Insider. It's Keith Koo, and this is a special show where I'm actually in the greater Shanghai region at the European and American High Tech Projects Roadshow and Exchange. My host is Wendy Yang, who's the president of the Zion Shanghai Investment Company. Hi, Wendy.
Hello, Casey.
And, you know, what's really important about this week I'm in China, especially given the rising tensions between the USA and China in regards to tariffs, in regards to international trade, I want to really demonstrate and show that there's a lot of people still trying to figure out how to make it work in spite of that and for the better of both our countries and both our ecosystems. So Wendy has a very special skill set. She's not only a super connector, but she's really focused on win-win outcomes between the companies she represents and local governments, whether it's the United States or China. So, Wendy, I really wanted to thank you again for inviting me to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure. So, I'm very happy. So, I can meet her all over the country. The friends come to Shanghai. So, I'm so happy.
Right, and Shanghai is the place of my ancestors. So, I always love coming here. Mm. So, Wendy, we're doing this event, and I know that there are some challenges or apparent challenges between doing business between the United States and China, but this has been really powerful. We've spoken to a lot of investors, startups, and local officials. What do you think is how we're still all going to work together? What do you think is the secret behind that?
So some people feel now we meet a different challenge between China and the American. So now my job is find some best solution to help American company to come to China to develop their market and their business. So I think now the market for the technology is the most important. So you know, China is the huge market for American technology. So now I think even you are a startup company, even you are a very early stage company. So come to China. If you can meet me, so you still can find some best solution. So just like we can give you some government good policy and a government fund, also we can find some local fund to help you. So this local fund maybe also they are your business partner. They are your market. So we can find a different way to support your business in China.
Right, I think that's great. So with the size of the Chinese market, so we talk at a consumer level, it's 5x what the consumer level in the United States is. If you have a technology company and you have an idea that crosses not just the United States but globally, that there are incentives and there's ways to come to countries like China. And you and Zion Shanghai Investment Company are specialists at bringing those ideas, bringing those companies over.
Mm, yeah.
So then, I know you do a lot of work with the Stanford Research Institute. What are your feelings about companies that start off with research, and then what are their challenges, successes involved with that?
You know, so the startup company is very early stage. They need a huge market. So what kind of market is fit for this technology? I think this is very, very important. So now China develop very fast. So you cannot say China haven't high technology. But what kind of technology is fit for Chinese market? I think this is most important to find a solution. So for example, now in China, the government is very care this technology. So they want to develop the technology belong to China. So if your technology is there for the chip, so we will find a lot of different market to fit for you. So depend on your chip is your chips is fit for what kind of field.
Right.
So, and we will do some research, help you do some research, and find for example, this city, the industry is fit for this chip technology develop. Then I will bring you go to this city.
Yeah, I think in a lot of conversations that I have with investors, both Chinese and American, I think that that's really a good example is that the chips get a lot of interest because depending on the technology, there might be some concerns over what technology is inside the chip.
Yeah.
And that applies to whether you're in the United States, China, Israel, etc. But I think there are ways of following a process to see that if you're a chip company that wants to do business with China, what are the ways to do that in a safe manner to make sure that all sides and regulations are followed?
Yeah, so now for us, it's the big challenge is there. So, you know, the security.
Yes.
So, yes, so it's some problem is very sensitive. So now I cannot mention that. So, but, you know, because we cooperate with the SRI, but they still very confident for that because China is very huge market. So if we find the fit market and find the fit situation, we still can transfer the technology.
Right.
So that's why we have to communicate more, so we have to learn each other. So, in the future, so I think we still can find a lot of chance to cooperate together.
Thank you, and I think this applies not just to doing business between the Chinese and the United States, but what we talk a lot about on Silicon Valley Insider is that as business becomes more rapid, the pace of technology changes. There are more and more regulations and laws. And having the experts such as you and your company with Zion Shanghai Investment Company, that you can actually help companies trying to bridge, trying to come over to, say, the Chinese jurisdiction or find a way of vetting whether your technology can be transferred over or not, that is a very smart move for companies to consider when developing their technology.
Yes, now this next year I plan to build a bridge. The bridge is to cooperate with the Shanghai local technology government. So they give us some team for professor come from different area. So when we bring the technology come to China, so firstly they will give us some suggestion. So this technology is fit for which kind of the field. So then we can go ahead for second step. Because these associates belong to government, they based in Shanghai, but they cooperate with Jiangsu and Zhejiang province. So you know, Jiangsu is province, Zhejiang is province. There are a lot of cities, you know. So A city cannot fit, and we can trust to the B city.
Right.
So the firstly is depend on what kind of technology fit for what kind of the industry. So now, firstly, we need the professor to decide that.
Yeah. So just to summarize, and thanks again, Wendy. Wendy Yang, president of Zion Shanghai Investment Company, and their company helps determine the right fit for companies exploring doing business in China. And I think it becomes more and more important with the types of conversations we're having, the perception of tariffs and challenges between doing business between the two companies, that having the right resources to make sure you're doing it in a compliant manner becomes important. So thanks again, Winnie, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I look forward to spending the rest of the week in the greater Shanghai area. If you have any questions or comments or want to get a hold of Wendy, you can email us at info@svin.biz, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Hey, Insiders, it's Keith Koo. Welcome back to my show, where this week I'm visiting the greater Shanghai region with an economic trade mission. In our first segment, we had Wendy Yang, president of Zion Shanghai Investment Group, and she was talking about how even with the climate of tension between the U.S. and China in trade, that there's still many groups actively looking at doing business and even still looking at the innovations. So next, I have a very special guest, Deborah Magid, who is the Director of Strategy for IBM Ventures. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi. Thanks, Keith.
And Deborah is spending the entire week also on this trade mission, and I wanted Deborah to take a few minutes to introduce herself and what she's been doing.
Yeah, sure. I have the most fun job in IBM, I think, and maybe in a lot of other companies because it's kind of unusual. I handle relationships with venture capitalists and angel investors all over the world on behalf of our high-growth business units. You know, you probably know what high-growth business units are these days in software: AI, analytics, cybersecurity, Internet of Things, and so forth. It's a completely global job, and I get to meet all the people who are doing cool new things.
So, Deborah, I think, you know, IBM has had certainly over, I think, close to 100 years, over 100 years of history. How long has that relationship been with other countries such as China?
We've been in China doing business for many, many decades. It's not a new set of relationships, and it's not a new market for us. So we have people from headquarters who come here and from other parts of the business, and we have a lot of Chinese nationals who work for IBM. We have thousands of employees today in China.
Yes. And I remember just a few seconds ago you were talking about having the most fun job. So what technologies are you particularly interested in on this trip?
Well, on this trip, you know, I think you know and your listeners know that China has quite a reputation in artificial intelligence. And in fact, the trade mission has asked us to speak about how AI is empowering new things like the factory of the future. And so I'm particularly interested in what the view of AI is here and what kinds of new things are being developed. It's one of the things I spend a lot of time on anyway.
Yeah, and today we've got a tour of one of the business parks. Was there anything that jumped out on you in terms of how the Chinese are implementing technology versus what you're used to seeing?
It was a little hard to tell because a lot of the things we saw were from bigger players who were housed in the tech park.
Right.
And we did go to an innovation center, but we didn't really get to talk to any of the startups who were there. So I'm reserving judgment until we go to Tangshan.
Yeah, we'll be a little bit later in the week.
Yeah.
So, Deborah, what other things beyond artificial intelligence are you seeing pop up?
In China or generally?
You can do either.
You know, there are things where AI is an underlying technology and intersects with other technologies and therefore powers other kinds of businesses. So, for example, I mentioned Internet of Things, which is also very big in China and is very big for IBM as well. And the technologies like blockchain and artificial intelligence are really very important in how you manage IoT networks and devices and make sense out of them.
Yeah, and the, as we discussed before doing the show, Jerry Cuomo of IBM's blockchain group, head of the research, we talked about this exact use case where blockchain, as it scales, as it has new functions, new technologies related to the blockchain, IoT is a perfect use case for that. And I think, as we saw at this summit we're at, I had a number of Chinese investors, Chinese companies come up to me and say, well, you do know that China is right now currently not keen on blockchain. I said, actually, no, I don't think that's true. I think what China is really not keen on is the run-up of cryptocurrency.
That's absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct. And you'll see Chinese startups and Chinese businesses using blockchain for various scenarios and various use cases. It was crypto, specifically, and Bitcoin that the Chinese government was making statements about.
Exactly. And so getting into the guts of the technology behind blockchain and distributed ledger, I know of many use cases where the Chinese are not just okay with it. They're actually embracing it and actually looking into those technologies.
In IoT, for example, you know, because you have a network of devices, they're passing information along from one to the next, and then it's being collected by a human or by another machine. And there's got to be some way to know what information is going where and from where and how it's to be trusted is a perfect use case.
Yeah, and that's why part of why I'm here, I'm representing also the Samada protocol, which is in the works, and that's a reputation-based blockchain where reputation's at the core, and that could be not just humans, but can also be devices and virtual devices.
That's right. And in fact, IBM does a lot of work with blockchain and supply chain, which is a use case that's not unique to IBM, but there are sensors and RFID tags and all kinds of devices along a supply chain that is used to track the goods, and then blockchain manages that. And so, these things all intersect.
Absolutely. So this is just the beginning of our trip, and we were talking about Tongshang later in the week.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things you think we're going to see there? I know you're reserving judgment, but what are some of the things you're looking forward to?
I've heard it's very beautiful. And I always like to combine business with pleasure. In fact, if you travel as much as I do, one ought to do that. So I'm looking forward to that. But we're supposed to meet a number of government officials and a number of startups. We're supposed to visit some office incubator parks and so forth. And I love seeing people in their own environment, because it's different than reading about it or talking to people on the phone. You get a whole different sense of how people live and work and what they think about.
And since you brought that up and you said earlier that you get to travel the world, what are some of the things you notice, the differences in culture in the business world between a country like China and the U.S. in regards to technology?
Yeah, well, I live in Silicon Valley. I'm not sure I mentioned that before. And so that, of course, is a unique environment unto itself. And I think, those of us who live there often get a little insulated from what's going on in the rest of the world, which is why I like to travel, because it gives you a better lens on what's going on. And one of the things I talk about when I travel in Southeast Asia or in Europe or elsewhere is how startups behave. What's the difference between a startup and an SME, which governments need to understand,
yes,
or even the Chinese government needs to understand this? And what does it mean to be a high-growth startup? What does hyper-growth mean? What does it mean to be ambitious? What does it mean to take risk? What does it mean to put yourself really out there and go all in on something? And the cultural differences in those things are actually pretty great.
Yeah, I think one thing we bring up on our show over and over again is that the secret to the Silicon Valley, where you and I both started, is that once upon a time, Intel days, IBM days, even Apple,
mm-hmm,
thought leadership, great access to capital, great university system, and free flow of ideas. But also really what's unspoken is at the time, the lack of true regulation.
Yes.
And then now we're living in blockchain, fintech, insurtech, health tech, and all of those have more and more regulations that startups in particular have to really be cognizant of. So I do think that in terms of the business climate in a country like China, where innovation is happening very rapidly, it's not that they don't have regulations, just the regulations are a little bit different, enforced a little bit different. And so I think there is this thought that in some technology like AI, because privacy laws are different in China than the U.S.
Certainly.
They can actually speed up innovation.
To some extent, that's true. I mean, certainly the Chinese government has the ability to make things happen in a certain way if they wish to do that, whereas we have to deal with, all kinds of regulators,
exactly,
and agencies and, politics and Congress and all of that, and it does slow things down. But the things I've observed, not just in China, but in the U.K. and in France and in the United States, is that people who are really entrepreneurial and want to change the way things are happening, they'll go do these things anyway.
Right.
I was speaking at a fintech conference in a small dinner for fintech CEOs a couple of years ago in London, and everyone wanted to ask me, you know, how is this even happening? You know, how are we doing this peer-to-peer lending? How are these companies doing cross-border trades? We don't even know what the regulations are. And I said, that's right, you know, and they'll catch up. And people will do what they have to do. And so I think it's a common theme that, you know, we were talking about drones. You talked to Edgar about drones. The regulations will catch up, but they don't start with that. Right. What starts are the entrepreneurs doing these new innovative things.
Right. Well, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us on this trip and also being on my show. I look forward to future insights with you, so please come on back.
I know. I'll see you again. I plan on it.
So once again, Keith Kuo, Silicon Valley Insider, joined by Deborah McGee, Director of Strategy for IBM Ventures. And if you have questions or comments about what you heard on today's show, email us at info@svin.biz, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Hey, insiders, welcome back to the show. It's Keith Koo, Silicon Valley Insider, reporting from the greater Shanghai area of China. Today's show is a special report on a trade mission I'm with a number of U.S. companies, partners, municipal and local government officials in working together in spite of the tariffs and the tensions between USA and China on the trade side, that there's still many folks committed to figuring out how things can work, should work, and how we move forward. Joined with me today is the CEO of Aeronide, Edgar Munoz. Hi, Edgar.
Hey, thanks for having me, Keith.
So Edgar is going to be here all week with me as part of this economic mission. And Edgar is with a startup, Aeronide, which is a UAV. And Edgar can probably explain what a UAV is better than I can.
Yeah, it's an unmanned aircraft vehicle or aerial vehicle.
And Edgar's company is really innovative in the space. I think they have 86 patents pending.
Yes, sir.
And they're from Florida. And I wanted to talk a little bit why Edgar decided to come on this trip. So, Edgar, what brought you here?
Well, we're part of IBM's, previously known as the Global Entrepreneur Program, now the Startup Program. And we were invited by Andrew Kreckler, our startup liaison, to actually come out here and have the opportunity to meet with government officials, investors, or whatnot from the Asia-Pacific market, which we thought was an incredible opportunity for a startup like ourselves.
Yeah, and it's incredible the amount of work your company's already done in the space, and we'll have to do a much broader show in the future to talk about all the different types of use cases and technologies that Aeronide is being involved with. But I think, again, back to this delegation economic mission, we had talked about, before the show started, some of the very specific things that it's being helpful in a cross-border China-USA discussion, because what many people don't think about, but we talk about on our show a lot, is in the startup world today, there's just so much innovation happening, but also in addition to that, lots of regulations. And I can imagine that although you've done so much work in the Western world, USA, Europe, even South America, that working in the greater Asia area must be a little bit different.
Oh, 100%. The regulatory environments completely differ. I mean, there's a lot of different environment and urban settings that are, you know, in the United States, we have a lot of land. The national airspace for the FAA is heavily regulated because it's one of the most populous airspaces in the world. In the sense of UAVs and UAS applications, the Asia-Pacific market has been way more flexible than America. So it'll be a great opportunity for us, a company that's been used to really stringent regulations and working with a government that has stringent regulations on the data management side, but on the actual operation side of a UAV or UAS, it's more flexible. So it's a kind of unique situation for us in doing business out here in the Asia-Pacific market.
Why don't you give the listener an overview of what Aeronide does?
Yeah, so Aeronide is an autonomous aerial systems company. We're based out in Melbourne, Florida, in the Space Coast. We specialize in custom autonomous UAV and UAS applications for various commercial industries. Our mission is to integrate an efficient and clean technology into innovative drone platforms. And our core focus areas right now for the market is in logistics and transportation, emergency response and law enforcement, and medical aid and relief.
That sounds really cool. We recently in California have been supporting Call for Code, and it was a number of different groups involved, including the first responders, and we just had the wildfires recently.
Yes, sir.
So how would your UAV actually work in that setting?
Yeah, I'll kind of tie to the whole topic here in Shanghai, which is for artificial intelligence and machine learning. So one of the things we kind of speak to in the emergency response is AI-enabled drones can save life. And today I showed you guys an architecture of what we're building, utilizing machine learning tactics and deep linking tactics with the IBM Watson platform to help not only make the flight more efficient and safer, but also building visual recognition models that can get us real-time situational awareness that's really valuable and pertinent to the end, first responders or emergency responders. So UAVs can gain a lot of high-value aerial intelligence that is, very valuable, and we could get it accurately and frequently, especially with our fleet management software, where we can do X out the traditional sense of one pilot, one drone, and change it to one pilot, many drones. And that's really the idea and the concept that we can help the emergency responders with.
Yeah, I think that's really important. A lot of the use cases, because our Call for Code was specifically focused on wildfires, a lot of the teams that were submitting ideas, they don't have the depth that your company has already in the UAV space. But many of the ideas were relying on the assumption that a UAV would be involved in terms of the surveys, in terms of even to the point where, and I think you're working on this as an actual use case, that a drone could also help extract a firefighter or a victim in the fire itself.
Yeah. With regulations aside, let's say in a perfect world, that's already been figured out. There's aircraft that exist that can carry hundreds of humans. I mean, we have 747s out there. The technology that, we're working with and integrating, utilizing platforms like the IBM Watson for artificial intelligence, utilizing, technologies like LiDAR and radar, and utilizing the high-power GPUs that exist now, we're able to aggregate and take that heavy data sets that were impossible to process near real-time and actually do it much quicker. And I really believe that in doing UAV applications and emergency response, there's just a multitude of different things we can do. There can even be a meshing network for communications. So when networks are down, I mean, AT&T did a use case like that after Hurricane Irma and down in Puerto Rico. And so those are use cases that, you can use this platform for gaining that situational awareness that's extremely important on making life decision-making. And as well as creating a communication network.
So just to clarify, you actually use the network of drones to create a communication network.
Yeah, you can put hotspots onto the UAVs and do a network mesh.
Well, I think I heard a similar story where Google's experimenting with balloons.
Yeah. They've hot air balloons. And, hot air balloons actually are really economical and they can stay up for a longer time. But for lower altitude applications, especially in urban areas, UAVs will be a huge asset for any kind of disaster response.
That's great. So beyond first responder, what are some other, you brought up supply chain and logistics?
Yeah, UAVs are primarily used for data collection. So some of the things that we can collect is critical infrastructure. We can do damage or hazard assessment on highways, do an inspection so we can help with the procurement process. A really strong use case is helping with the detection, validation, assessment, response, recovery for incidents on a highway. DOT not only spends a lot of money and public safety spends a lot of money on responding to that incident, sending out the ambulances, sending out the fire department, sending out the first responders, but they enter blind, so sometimes they're overprepared and sometimes they're underprepared. And most of the time they're hopeful to be overprepared because, losing a life is huge. But another huge thing that these DOTs face is loss of productivity, traffic jams. There are some DOTs that face 6-hour jams just because of an incident, and being able to not only help respond to that incident with, you know, equipment or look for and assess, but also provide, you know, real-time analytics for procurement processes so they can order the correct procurements for the road that was damaged. You know, those are things that we look to UAV can help with.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I happen to know in the Silicon Valley, one of our local agencies that manage roads. I actually know the engineer that manages the software that calculates the erosion of the road.
Oh.
And they actually sell that to most other municipalities across the USA. So this could also be something that they could actually easily adopt into their existing software platform.
I mean, one of the extreme benefits that we see with UAVs is the ability to scale. You know, one of the things that we did in the past where we did a engineering of inspection of a cell tower for an engineering firm that works with Crown Castle. And, you know, we envision a system that can, you know, do 10 towers a day rather than having one person do a tower a day. You know, we could have our system do 10 a day. And companies like Crown Castle have 40,000 cell towers that they have across the board. And instead of doing it monthly, they could do it daily. And it would cost them the same as if they were doing monthly.
Sure.
And one of the biggest things I was speaking to you earlier was a big portion of their resources went to, you know, liability claims. You know, people falling off, getting injured while doing these inspections. So we're lowering those claims for their insurance policies.
Yeah, I can see many applications for the insurance industry as well. So given that not everyone knows about UAVs and people start hearing about what you're doing, what are the like typical reactions that people have when you start really getting into this? Because you're really passionate about it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, for the general public, you know, two reactions are kind of similar. A, military purposes, weaponization, or B, government spying and, you know, privacy issues. So we look for applications that are for the general public, you know, safety application, emergency response, because we really see the power of this technology that it can do for helping save a life, mm-hmm. especially in rural areas, and the scalability of it, and for procurement and productivity purposes. So we see, we're looking for use cases that are specific for helping. We believe in transparency of the data as well, and, you know, we are against weaponization of our system. So there's a market for that in the military world, and there's a supplier for that demand. That's not something we want to get into. You know, our name is derived, you know, from enjoying the air. Aero meaning air, and, you know, nide in Danish meaning enjoy. So we really have a humanistic approach to building our architecture.
Well, thanks for the explanation of the NIDE.
Yes, sir.
When I first saw the name written, I was thinking Dine.
Yeah, we get that a lot.
So, Edgar, with the last few seconds to summarize, I think that it's a great confluence of events right now with technology and emerging technology. You have an UAV. I talked about AT&T coming out with 5G as well as Verizon that will certainly help connect a lot more devices. And then you have all this interest. I just wish all the best to you and your team.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Thank you, Keith. I appreciate you for allowing me on the show, and I look forward to further conversations.
Oh, great having you. Definitely would love to have you back. So you've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo, joined by the CEO of Aeronide, Edgar Munoz, and we're reporting to you from Shanghai, China. Any questions or comments on today's show or about Aeronide or about Shanghai, give us an email at info@svin.biz, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Hey, Insiders. Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. Today's show is a little different format because I was giving a report out on my recent trip to Shanghai, China, where I was an invited guest with the U.S. Minority Business Agency, as well as several local governments in and outside of Shanghai regional that asked me to present on blockchain and emerging technologies. So earlier in the show, we had several guests, Wendy Yang of Zion Investment Company,
Edgar Munoz, CEO of Aeronide, and Deborah Majid of IBM. And I think the story, to really wrap this up, is that despite the news about trade wars between U.S. and China, as well as tariffs, there's still a lot of desire for economic activity for the people in those countries, whether you're an investor, whether you're a factory owner, or whether you're a local government. And if you have any questions or comments about how to set up a business from China to the U.S. or U.S. to China, give us an email at info@svn.biz. We'll be doing a lot more shows on foreign investment, cross-border business, because I think that's just something that is really important in light of the news today. And speaking of news, there's been a lot of activity going on. Facebook has gotten a lot of press again because of the reported 50 million user account breach and potentially an additional 40 million to be 90 million. And it is significant because it kind of wraps up a lot of things we talk about on our show. Facebook uses what's called APIs, ways to connect Facebook with their platform and all these other services. A hacker, and this is considered a sophisticated attack, was able to exploit three related vulnerabilities to, in essence, allow a hacker to gain access to not only your profile, but a profile of somebody you're viewing as they're pretending to be you. And although Facebook has reported that they don't know of any known data theft or breaches yet, they did take the precaution to reset all those accounts. They also had to submit a GDPR notification, so General Data Protection Regulation of the European Union, under that new regulation that was enacted earlier this year in May. They had a self-report that potentially all these European-related accounts were in this 90 million batch of affected users. And we bring this up time and time again, that we're becoming more and more complex with systems, with social media, and governments all around, including the state of California, are becoming very, very astute in how they ask companies who have these breaches for a response for what their plan is and then what they're going to do about it and why did it happen to begin with. So if you're a much smaller company, which is pretty much everybody, you need to take this seriously because there are fines and there are repercussions. And if you have questions about that, you can always email us at info@svn.biz. Speaking of fines and repercussions, it was just announced that Uber reached a $148 million breach settlement with all 50 states. And that, if you recall, is because they had a massive data breach a year ago in regards to exposing customers and drivers, even drivers' driver's licenses. And this is one of the few times that independent assessors think that the $148 million settlement is actually a quote-unquote fair payment for the amount of data that was leaked. And so wrapping that up to the Facebook story we just had, more and more times companies are now having to pay up for their, you know, in essence, sloppiness with their data handling procedures. Tencent, which is sort of like the telecom provider and the Facebook and the Yahoo of China, just announced that they filed a U.S. initial public offering of $800 million, and that is for their music streaming service. Now, you might think of this as the Chinese version of Spotify. I think what's interesting is that with this deal, Spotify owns a certain percentage of Tencent, and Tencent owns a certain percentage of Spotify. And this really wraps up nicely with today's theme of the show, that despite tariffs and trade wars, China and the U.S., companies are definitely trying to partner effectively. San Diego's in the news, and not in a good way. The Port of San Diego was hacked, and it was a ransomware hack. Their back-end systems are completely compromised and inoperable. But the good news is that it did not affect the actual port operations, which would be a worst-case scenario where the ransomware that affects the Port of San Diego completely shuts down all shipping activity. So thanks again for listening to Silicon Valley Insider. This week's show is slightly different because of my economic visit to China, the Shanghai region. And I just really wanted to impress upon the theme of the show, which is in spite of all the news, the U.S. and China, there are definitely businesses wanting to work together. And if you have any questions on how to do that effectively, email us at info@svn.biz. And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. For questions or comments on today's program, or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.